Supported by the Delaware County Chamber of Commerce, a catalyst for sustainable economic prosperity in the Catskills, fostering cooperation, forging partnerships, promoting tourism, providing legislative advocacy, and building strong community ties throughout the region. More information at 607-746-2281 or DelawareCounty.org.
This is Jim Rauter, host of The Guitar Show, Thursday Morning Music, and Nika's Dream, here on WIOX Roxbury. It's been said that happiness doesn't result from what we get, but from what we give. And you can feel happy right now by joining the Holiday Fundraising Binge and making a tax-deductible contribution at WIOXradio.org. Every dollar you give will be matched. You'll feel great helping to keep community radio live and local in the Catskill Mountains. WIOX, here for you, supported by you.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the radio.fm app. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
It's going good, Ryan.
Yeah. How are you? I'm okay.
It's good.
Yeah. What have you been up to?
I made one last good effort at hunting, and I think I got a doe, so I'm good.
All right. That's good.
How about yourself?
Yeah. I shot a doe last week, so can't complain about that.
Nice.
Do the last two quarters, I don't know, later this week.
Yep. Mine's hanging. Going to use it for the Deer Processing Workshop Catskill Forest Association is hosting this Saturday.
Oh, that's right. Nice.
So, that'll be the demonstration deer.
Yeah.
But found something cool in the woods. While I was hunting, I came across the antler shed. Big antler shed from a nice buck. I determined from how sun-bleached it was likely from last year. It wasn't anything fresh dropped from this year yet. Then, about a mile or so, a little less than a mile maybe, on my taking the gun for a walk ordeal, I came across a dead deer that also was a buck, and a really nice buck. I'm now becoming confident that the antler that I found was from that buck.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's nearly identical.
Yeah.
Everything that's unique and characteristic is identical on both. So each of them have a long brow tine that hooks backwards at the end of the tip. Both are the first year he wasn't quite a 10-point side, but a little short on the 1 point, but he grew into it on the second year and became a little bit bigger in mass, a little bit longer tines, and a half a 10-point buck, and it was a really nice deer, big old mature buck, and
yeah,
found his head in the woods, dead.
And that's up in the higher elevations, huh?
No, that was low. I was in a swampy area.
No, no kidding.
Yep.
Swamp buck.
He was a swamp buck, that's for sure. I found the antler tine was under, the shed antler was underneath the cedar tree, so
yeah.
Good winter spot for a deer to lay down. And then the dead buck was, I would say, within 100 yards of cattails.
Yeah.
It was swampy where I was at.
Yeah, I had to work hard to get some deer this year. I had some opportunities, but, for whatever reason, that's hunting. Didn't see the deer that I either wanted or didn't present the opportunity to take a nice clean shot. I like to believe now that as I've progressed in hunting, I don't take bad shots anymore.
But no.
Never know until it happens, right?
Yeah.
But
that's true.
I used to. I think every hunter has, and while hunting, you know, you take a bad shot, you once you fire it, you say, man, that was, maybe shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, sometimes there's other factors involved as well, you know?
Branches, twigs.
A little twig you didn't see deflected the shot, or I don't know, man. These muzzleloaders I'm not very happy with.
Yeah, why? Make a click?
Well, no, that's what I shot my doe with, and they're just not nearly as accurate. I don't know what happened. I shot the gun the day prior, and shooting great.
Yeah.
And I had a great rest. It was the deer was stopped. It was less than 100 yards, and I had sighted it in for about 70 yards, so that's almost exactly what I sighted it in for.
Yeah.
Deer was standing there broadside perfectly, and it hit high. It hit the spine area. I lost some meat. Definitely going to lose some backstrap out of it.
Yeah. Hey, it happens, man.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. So I'm going to shoot that gun again after the season and just see maybe if it's off. I don't know.
Yeah, it's the weirdest thing. It's like I'm more comfortable with my bow anymore. I need to practice more, I think, with the gun, I'll be honest with you, which is backwards.
Yeah.
It's just backwards, you know. But, no, I didn't. I shot the doe. Like I tell you before, all my stands are bow stands. And where I was like, man, you know, I'm sitting there with a 30-06, and I'm like, if I see a deer, I'm going to shoot her from about 10 yards away.
Well, there you go.
And then I did.
That's good.
10 yards away, 30-06. So it was close to the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kids even heard it. They're like, we heard you, you know?
Good. So
yeah.
Easy retrieve home.
Yeah, it was. So, but that's good, you know. It was pretty young deer, and man, that meat is tender, man. You know, year and a half old doe.
Yep, that's what I got, too.
Yeah, and I can't complain about it. There's a noticeable difference. I got a 2.5-year-old buck earlier, and 2.5-year-old buck, I think, is, to me, the nicest animal to get because they're not too old, they're not too young.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to choose an age class for meat, I'd say it's the best. 3.5 I've had, and then I think it can be really good or really bad above that. It can be good. I'm not saying you can't shoot an older buck and it can't be bad meat. I'm not going to say that, but a year and a half old is damn good.
You usually can't go wrong with that.
I haven't gotten one in a few years, and I was like, wow, this is really tender.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Even the front shoulders, everything is tender. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yep.
I think even the shank meat is tender.
Did you try any shank meat?
Yeah, I cut as much as I could, but on a little doe, shank meat, yeah. Not much to get.
Right. You have to work for it.
Everything is, from the neck, everything. So, but tonight, every third Wednesday, we speak to Mr. Mead, Mr. Gary Mead, about a different tree species. But tonight, not going to be so much tree species. It's going to be grading wood from stumps to lumber. Gary, how's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
All right. What have you been up to?
Saturday, I got my doe, and that was about, a year and a half.
Yeah.
And you know, my sons, they got does, and we did good hunting this year. We have a good amount of venison. I'm happy.
Yeah, you guys go through it, don't you?
Yeah, now I'll be eating it every day for, that's my protein.
John,
peanut butter and
his wife got a, how big of a doe?
She's dressed 132 or 136? 130s.
Yeah.
A doe.
Big, big doe.
That's good size, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're going to talk about grading lumber, and I don't know a heck of a lot about walking through the woods. I've had walkthrough with some loggers, and you know, you can tell a wormy maple standing, you can tell a curly maple, and you can tell a bird's eye maple.
Now, I don't know if you can tell by looking at the tree.
By looking at the bark.
Jesus.
You can?
I don't know, man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Nice. You'll have to teach me that one day, because I've always wondered.
I have a bird's eye right growing by the mill.
You know it's bird's eye.
Well, Paul Crickon showed me that. And Curly's really easy. Curly's just wavy. You know, it's right in the bark. I mean, you can see it.
Okay.
That's Curly is like a ribbon wood. It's very beautiful. And then wormy maple's easy to tell. I mean, that can stand and grow while those worms are in it. They don't kill the cambrium. They go into the wood, you know, into the heart of the tree. But they leave these little holes, and then when the, you know, water runs down through them, they kind of, whatever they, you know, they eat, and then whatever comes out of the backside seems to make a stain in the wood.
Yeah.
But, you know, some people get all kind of weird when I talk about that. But, you know, it goes through the kiln, everything's dead. It doesn't, I mean, there's no fungus there, no, you know, bacteria, whatever. But it sure makes pretty wood.
Well, you know,
these
think
are the
about,
kinds of woods that aren't commercially harvested. I mean, some people look for curly and they separate it and they have a separate market. But most of these big commercial mills that saw hundreds of thousands of feet a day, I mean, these logs go through and they just get degraded into, I mean, and that's the grading process. It's every mill could be a little bit different. Because I bought logs and lumber for the better part of 40 years now, and I never seen, other than Medicare, a more complicated system.
It's very complicated.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, it starts in the forest, and there's basically, correct me if I'm wrong, but three different times a tree is going to be graded, essentially. And one is by the forester.
Right.
And he has the most, I would say, they're all an art. Because it's all, there's no way to put wood to a science. It's like when you cut down trees, you know. You can't be paid per hour to cut trees down because they're all different and it'd be difficult.
Yeah.
That's even just removing a tree. But a forester, it's a backwards process because you're trying to take something round that's not nicely round and put it through an equation that spits out dimensional lumber.
Right, yeah.
And then sells it lump sum to, you know, a logger who buys the trees, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And then he turns around. So that's one. So the forester's walking around. He's estimating marginal height and diameter and then putting that to species, right?
And marking them different colors, possibly.
Yeah, right.
So then the logger comes in.
Then the logger comes in and says, yeah, that bid's about right. And they bid on it, right? But then he turns around, right, and sells it as logs.
Right.
To the sawmill.
Mm-hmm.
Then the sawmill.
And there's very little markup for each one of these guys. I mean, you got to deal in hundreds of thousands of millions of board feet in order to make a living. It's very commercialized, and
What do you mean by commercialized? You mean people are making money?
No, I mean that part of it is very high speed.
Yeah.
There's nothing slow about it.
Right.
I don't rush anything. You know, I saw a lot of low grade, and it's beautiful. And, you know, logs come to me that are too big for other mills to saw. It slows their production down. Anything over 30 inches, 28, 30 inches, they kick them out of there. It takes more time to saw a big log for them. Their systems aren't set up for it. But, you know, over the past couple of weeks, I saw some rock oak and some red oak. And I think there were four rock and three red. And they were all 28 to 36 inch.
Now, rock oak, are you talking about chestnut oak that has really platy bark?
Yeah.
It's sold, as far as I know, commercially.
For white
the
oak.
Same.
Yeah.
As white oak.
Yeah.
Right? Is that wrong? Or?
That's what I hear, yeah.
That's what I have always known.
But I've never sold it as white oak. I market rock oak.
Yeah.
And I tell people when they're buying it, it's the same as white oak. I mean, it's in the white oak family. And it is. And it's not in the red oak family. So, and, you know, but anyway, I got some beautiful, you know, slabs. And, you know, some of them aren't so nice. So, you know, it takes me about an hour and a half to saw one of those. But, you know, there's 500 board feet in a log.
Yeah.
There's a lot of wood in the log. And I try to get, you know, we peel the bark and power wash them. And, you know, that takes time, too. That keeps a live edge on it because those big, wide slabs, you want to have a live edge. My sawmill will do 27 inches. That's it. So what I end up doing is I have to peel off enough to get it down to about 26 and a half, 27. And what I usually do is I take a slab off of one side because the outside of the round, you can drop a four-inch slab and be down to 27 inches and then just flip it on that face and then just saw.
Yeah.
Because you got, and I save that piece of bark or the live edge and the slab to add to the pieces after I saw them. I can add it back on and make them, you know, the 30 or 31, you know, 28, 29, 30 or 31 inch just by gluing it back to that. You know, that straight edge. But anyway, that is a whole process other than the grading system is, like I say, the logger gets it, and then it comes to the mill, and that's to they saw it. There's one third of every log is low grade because you have the heart. And that's why all the hardwood industry, all the cants or the centers or the hearts, which is very unstable. It's the hardest part of the tree, but it's the most unstable. And it splits and checks and, you know, depending on every species, a little bit different. But so even a veneer log, the whole center, I mean, that's why they stop when it's about 6 inches around because there's no more good wood in that. You know, for veneer in that log.
And yeah, the heartwood is basically a non-functioning or less functioning sapwood.
Right. Yeah. Plus, and it's very you can't figure. You know, in most trees it is a lot less rot resistant because you know the sapwood that'll rot in no time, and you know if you leave sapwood on red cedar, the sapwood will rot right off.
But not the heartwood.
That'll last and last. But the heart, you know, like of that big red oak that I cut, you know, the heart was a 6 inch in diameter. And then when you're sawing too, you know, grading is, I mean, it's this is more something, you know, another thing I just thought of. When you're sawing a log, the guy at the mill, now the sawyer turns into a grader because you can have, you know, I made the comment the heartwood is, you know, about a third, 25-30% is heartwood, and that's a gimme. But you can take a log, and if you can saw for grade or you can live saw it. Live sawing means you just saw through and through, and when you saw it for grade, you peel each corner off at a time, keep flipping it around and seeing the grade of that one side. I've had logs that had garbage on one side and selecting better, almost veneer on the other side of the log. And when you're sawing, when you open it up, that's the first cut in the log. It's called opening the log. And when you see what's there, you kind of got to grade it before you get into that. But, you know, hopefully if you're... you know, what you want to get out of it, you saw the right side first. You don't like what you see, you flip it and saw the next side off. And, you know, now that, like right. I say, the sawyer turns into a grader. And what he's trying to do is get the most money per grade out of that log. You don't want to make a bunch of two common boards. He wants to make a few of them and a lot of select boards. I've sawed logs that I had this white oak. It was a 12-footer. And I actually peeled the bark with the debarker. And I could see it was kind of, it wasn't fully, this was bird's eye curly. But I went 12 feet and I took the slab off, and I wish now I would have saved the first cut off it. And then I took a 6-quarter or 5-quarter slab next with the two kind of live edges on it. And that fell on the table, and it looked like a burl, a 12-foot-long burl. I've never seen this in a tree before or since. So now I'm super excited. I flipped that log, and I cut the next side off. It was just as straight as anything. And all the other three sides, I only got one board out of that tree that had burl in it. But this was like a burl that went the whole length of the tree rather than, you know, extruding out like burls do. And it's in the gallery, and I just save it. But a board like that, if it goes through the grading system, that would have been sent away for pallet. And that's what all happens to all the heartwood, too. They take these 8x8s or 6x6s or 5x whatever. You know, once they've the grade is gone in the log, they kick that beam out and they make them all a certain thickness and width, and then they go through the a mill that slices them into, you know, pallet boards. You got an 1.5x4, and they're actually 1.5x3.5, and then you got the 1/2-inch boards that are the top and the bottom. But anyway, it's quite the pallet industry is quite something too. You know, I've seen those things in action. They make a pallet about every 6 seconds on this conveyor line. You know, there's just a guy there as fast as he can stacking sticks up in between these things. And, you know, this nailer comes down and nails all the boards, you know, 40 by 48 all at once. And then there's some saws in the bottom that chop out, you know, where you can, the four-way pallets, you can go in from the side. And they chop those grooves in it. And then the last thing, that a guy stands there, he flips the pallet over, puts these sticks on the bottom, and the next nailer, in one shot, boom, you know, all the nails get shot into once. Yeah. And then it goes off the end of the conveyor and goes on this, it's a table with a spring in it, and every time a pallet goes on it, it goes down. And after so many pallets, it automatically raises up. The guy running the forklift comes and picks up a row of, you know, 10 or 20 or whatever they make on top of one another.
Where'd you see this?
This was over to Melt's Lumber up in, they were over by, over Windham Mountain. What the hell's the name of that town? But anyway.
Oh, Prattsville?
Well, it wasn't, not Prattsville. It's over Windham Mountain on the other side. We used to play basketball against a school there once a year. Actually, it was this time of year we went over. Oh, can't think of the name of it, but it doesn't matter. But Melch Lumber, he got big.
Ashland,
and
Julie.
He's in Hudson and Grahamsville. But anyway, so, and it's just amazing. I mean, these big, huge machines. Dick Fairburn had a pallet mill there, and when he sawed off the grade, you know, if he got low grade logs, it went right through the pallet mill. Now, talking about low grade logs, there are a lot of different things that degrade lumber. See, now we went to the forester, and then through the logger. Now we're at the mill, and if the mill has your sawyer become the grader. And once it leaves him, these big commercial companies, they have a slow chain, they call it. All the lumber goes on this, you know, it's probably
catwalk,
20 foot wide. Yeah, and the grader stands there with a stick and a little book, and
That's the coolest thing, man.
It's just amazing. Yeah, flips crazy. Them things over, and oh my God, it
that
makes
guy
it
gets
look
paid a lot.
So easy.
Supposedly.
Yeah. Yeah, but and then you know, there's guys on both sides of the table, and you know, whatever it's graded goes on this pile and that pile, but yeah. It's so
he's a
now
smart
if,
dude, man. He can look at a board and instantly grade it. I mean, you gotta really know your stuff to do
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and the darndest things degrade wood. I mean, there's so many things that are
like,
defects.
Like what? What's some examples?
Knots, disc, the color, sapwood, minerals, curly, you know, wormy. I mean, these are all degrading things.
Yeah, and when you watch this guy on the catwalk, he's got a little, we have it at the office.
It's a little black
a little,
book.
Well, no, it's not just that, but it's a stick.
A stick with a
and
hook
it
in
grabs,
it.
Oh. It grabs the board and can flip it over. So he flips it over as he's walking, and in a second he can decide what he thinks about that.
Well, that stick has a gauge on it with numbers, and the one that, you know, he hooks the board. First, he flips it over to look at both sides, and then if you notice, he pushes that stick down so he can do the width of the board. It's a very,
right.
It's like a piece of veneer almost. You know, it's veneered so it'll bend without
oh,
breaking.
Yeah, the stick, right, yeah.
And, you know, it's a 6-inch, 7-inch, 4-inch. He measures it, and he just puts a little thing in his book. You know, it works with his fingers. And he opens his fingers and the book opens. He closes his fingers and the book closes. And but the book isn't very, it's no bigger than his hand, really. I mean, a little bigger. But, you know, I wonder how they get all that information, that tiny little thing. And it must be like, you know, when they're in court, those stenographers, when they're doing shorthand or whatever they do, it's got to be the kind of the same kind of system, but.
Well, then that stick's got a little piece of chalk on the end of it, and he can make marks on it too.
Oh yeah, he's right.
People down the line know, you know, where it's going, what it's doing.
Yep.
And this is all happening on a conveyor belt.
Yeah.
You know, he's walking doing this. It's happening in real time.
But now they
coming off the mill.
They have computers that stamp the piece, and you know, a computer reads both sides, grades it. Puts this, because Johnson Brothers a few years ago put that in, and there's a number on every board, and every board goes into the computer, and it's whatever pack, when the pack is full, it has all, every board that's in there, and it's quite a, but it kind of, the grader, I actually thought the grader did a better job than the computer did, but. Anyway, that's
yeah, I mean, it's still an art. How do you look at a board and grade it? A computer, I don't know.
Well, it's so now, okay, the mill guy's got it. Now it's sawed and graded by the grader, and now
sorted.
It's getting stickered and put into the kiln. Now the guy in the kiln, he's a key operator of this whole system because he can ruin this lumber if he dries it wrong. You got to understand, you cannot dry. You can dry cherry and maple, you know, hard and soft together. Beech is about the bitchiest to dry. It just, it's not very. I always air dry beech for a year, 4 or 5 or 6 quarter, because.
Yeah.
It gets cranky in there, and it'll twist, and it'll cup, and it does all kinds of dances in there, and it's which isn't cool, but, you know, and it degrades it. So if the kiln operator doesn't follow the schedule good, and you can't just follow the schedule, you have to go, I go into the chamber, you know, and you know, when I'm thinking about maybe 30% or 25%, and you know, I check it with the meter. But after doing this for 40 some years, or you know, I think I've been kiln drying for 30 years. But it's you walk into the chamber, and you can tell what the humidity of the lumber is, and I can walk in toward the end and say, man, this stuff is done. You know, it's cooked, it's ready. And, you know, then I grab the meter and I run around and check stuff. And, you know, most of the time I'm pretty correct. But, you know, I don't dry as much commercially as I did when I had the dimension mill. And I have a lot of different species and thicknesses, and I can't put them in there until they're below 25%. Most of them. I just, well, that red and white oak that I, or rock oak that I saw 2 weeks ago, is, that's in there cooking now. But all I did is, like, I'm keeping it at a very low, slow temperature. And when I first bought the kiln, the guy that sold it to me, he's a genius in kiln drying, but he built the machine. But he told me, he said, just don't hurry. You know, let the lumber dry itself. You're not drying the lumber. The lumber drying itself. And so you just, you know, this, what, if I put 4-quarter in there, 5-quarter, that'd be maybe a 2-week charge and it would be done. But since, you know, I have 8 and 10-quarter in there, it's going to be a 5 or 6 week. And, you know, you do it at really, really low temperature, very slow. And because, like I say, you know, now the kiln guy, he's in charge of the grade of this wood. And, you know, pallet lumber, they have a separate kiln for that because they flash fry that stuff. All I have to do with the pallet lumber is keep it in there. Well, it used to be 2 days at 130, and it kills everything in the bacteria and mold and whatever's in the wood. Now it's 3 days they made it, and nothing's supposed to leave the country that isn't kiln dried. Or, yeah. But, you know, we're selling logs green. When lumber, you can't ship out green. It has to be 130, and I think the logs might have to be too. I don't quote me on that, but that was to, you know, keep bugs from coming into the country and leaving the country. But you know, not everybody abides by that. And but some of the most beautiful wood that I've that really makes me happy to see is low grade. I see low-grade stuff, and, you know, I see hollow trees, and I just imagine how long it took for that thing to hollow out. And all that's done, because if I wanted to hollow that out, it would be painstaking with a chainsaw. Yeah. And this thing's already hollow. All I have to do is, you know, finish it off. But that has nothing to do with grading. That's just a whole different ball game when it comes to wood.
If you're tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is grading trees from logs or from stumps to lumber.
Beautiful face.
Hey, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is grading wood with Gary Mead from Stumps to Lumber. So, Gary?
Well, we left off and we were at the mill, kiln drying. So there's many different ways that you can... oak is probably the worst one. It's oak or honeycomb. And if you do that, you could take commercial lumber that sells for a buck and a quarter, in volume, in large volumes, a board foot to down to 25 cents just by drying it wrong. And so anyway, a lot of mills companies got in trouble, drying a $500,000 board feet or 100,000 board feet, and you open the doors. And that one guy that sold me the kiln, he's the one that warned me about oak right out the gate. And he goes, you got to be really careful with oak and the honeycomb and all this stuff. And he said, but it's like you can go in and check it during the charge and you think everything's okay. He said, it's like throwing a desk out the window. There's no damage till it hits the ground. But he said, if you dried that wrong, it won't honeycomb until you open those doors up. And then you hear pop and crack and bang, and it sounds like a bowl of Rice Krispies. He said, then you know you're in trouble. Anyway, but I've honeycombed a little bit of beech nettle honeycomb and get checks in it, and so will the oaks. But when I was doing commercial drying and I put stuff in there green, I bought mixed species of low grade, and it didn't matter in the dimension mill, that honeycomb, it just defects like that, they don't affect the strength of the wood. Because I was making a very strong product, and anything but rot, you could put through. And then there's some species of wood that they don't even get graded. Beech nut, they don't grade that. That goes through. As soon as the beech nut log shows up at the mill, gets shipped to the just squared off into cans and sent to the pallet mill. And beech is one of my favorites, but it's a bear to dry. It is just really. And, as hard as black locust is and dense, it's one of the easier ones to dry. I mean, I was surprised when I dried my first couple of batches of that.
John, you've done some milling lately.
Yep.
Portable sawmill. What have you learned from looking at trees while they're standing and then putting them in through the mill?
Well, I definitely can't identify anything through the bark, like... bird's eye or curly or anything like that, but you're always looking for crotches, things like that, bark inclusion in the crotches. That's going to be a major problem. You can saw that in or you can saw that out. Depends on what you want to do with the product when it's done. Sometimes that stuff's desirable. Talk to the landowner and see what they want, but in a commercial setting, that'll always be downgraded. But in a smaller scale, like I said, you might want to have that, and really will raise the value of the product if it's treated right and done something with.
Seems like a lot of people, when I say people are members, the Catskill Forest Association's members, they want big trees done. The Alaskan mill comes out, right, when you get above 30 inches or so.
Yeah, you got to do something different, because most sawmills aren't, Gary mentioned it earlier, most sawmills aren't set up to do anything bigger than
that. Yeah, what are people doing with that? Bar tops and stuff and tables?
Big
and,
tables.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a guy out in Pennsylvania that he'll saw up to 72 inches, 6 foot in diameter.
That is incredible.
And I get slabs from Long Island. I am once every 8-10 weeks to dry. And, I have some stuff in there now that's 62 inches wide, hard maple, and... I mean, it's 60 on one end and 64 on the other, and, with a crotch, and, oh, my, it's just amazing stuff. And then there's a piece of walnut in there, 4 inches thick, 42 inches wide, and 10 foot long.
Wow.
And then, but he sends it down to that mill because he used to send stuff in done with a chainsaw mill, and you know they're kind of rough. But this guy has a band mill. It's and God, the stuff is. And he saws it and stickers it as he saws it. And when it comes to me, it's just a stickered log. He saws everything 12-quarter, which is 3 inches. Once in a while, he'll slab it off at 4-inch if Harry wants it. But, you know, I'm thinking about sending that big ash log I got off of Huckleberry Brook down there to have sawed. Because I keep looking at that thing, and I don't know if I want to attempt to saw that or not. But they'd saw it, and, you know, with the because that has several crotches in it, and I didn't want to cut them off because I was thinking how I would cut it, and I want to leave all them in because that would just make crazy wood, and it's ash. And but you know, I'm in negotiating now with, you know, having them when they're going down with the next load, if they have room for this log, they're gonna, you know, if they have to drive an hour out of their way to come pick it up, I'll pay them, and then, you know, they'll have it sawed and bring it back to their place, and when they come up to drop wood off, they bring it back to me, or else drop it on the way. But you know, it's that kind of wood. That's a special grade because you can't. It's ungraded. I mean, he saws it right live, saw it, and the bark is still on, and you know, it'll fall off during the drying process. Very little bark will stay on, but you know, it's a beautiful to see. And every piece he sends up here, you know, people are like, they see it when I take it off the truck, and they, you know, if you see anything you like, just let me know. I'll call the guy and get you a price. And I mean, it's all for sale. He told me that once, because when I first started drying for him, I was thinking, yeah, I don't, you know, I never thought that. I thought he had to have it all back, and I bought some pieces from him one time, and he goes, everything I send up there is for sale. If somebody in your place sees it and wants a piece, just call me and I'll sell it to them. So I've been doing that. And some of these giant tables, my planer's 24-inch. And, you know, I bought some 42-inch, 46-inch wide slabs from this guy. And, you know, I haven't done anything with them yet, but I'm going to get a router table. And they, you know, there's about a 3/4-inch bit that goes in, and you just go back and forth and shave it flat. And then you can sand it and, you know, have a nice, because everything in the kiln warps a little bit. When you dry lumber, it humps up. I mean, some of it stays nice and flat. When you take it out of the kiln, some sawmills like Johnson Brothers, they didn't grade it until it come out of the kiln because they allowed for what happened in the kiln. You know, some stuff, I've had beautiful, like, selecting better boards go in the kiln, and just for some reason they get cranky in there, and they not, you know, back in 94, I bought, I think, about 4,000 or 5,000, maybe 6,000 board feet, 8 and 10/4 cherry from a big company, Mallory, out in Hancock. They're not in business anymore, but they sold it to me really cheap, and it come in, and I was making dolly boards out of, you know, this stuff. It was a headboard for a dolly, 2-inch thick. But anyway, I looked at this stuff, and I started processing, and I said, I can't cut this up for dollies. And I've had it stored in my shed ever since. And I took some, about 8 or 10 boards out, 8/4 the other night, and brought them out to the sawmill, and I sawed the twist and the curve out of them. And it's curly cherry. It's so beautiful. It's amazing. But
yeah, I mean, you just don't know sometimes, I would imagine, with wood because of the stresses a tree goes through with wind and tension and compression. I mean, those things are so unpredictable.
Yeah, they are, yeah. And, you know, hemlock is, you want to, And there's different grades for different species. Like a hemlock, they get what they call shaky hemlock. And that's stuff that grows up higher on the mountain and gets a lot of wind. Because if a strong wind hits hemlock, the grain separates. And it's become shaky. And, you know, I've had, hemlocks, logs come in, and, you know, whoever's bringing me hemlock, I say, you know, I don't pay anything for shake because it's, you can't use it. Because it runs, you just can't use it. So, I mean, you can use it for, if you want to retain a wall outdoors or something, you can use it for that. But, you know, there's a couple loggers that got mad at me because I said, I can't, what do you want me to do with it? You know what you brought me, and I can't use it. I can waste time sawing it, but it's shake. And you can see right in the end, but I don't think you can tell when the tree is standing. And, I had some custom, I had this one log, a hemlock, come in. It was about probably 30 feet long, and I was going to cut it, and it was probably 30 inches on the stump. And the guy was so proud of it, and he pulls in on his trailer, and I said, This is useless.
Hey, you know what? While I got you here, Gary, what do you think about white pine? You don't talk about white pine too often. The wood.
I like white pine.
But what about the wood that's unique to white pine?
What do you mean?
I don't know, because I noticed when you fell white pines, they can be unpredictable, and I don't know why sometimes.
When you fell them?
Yeah.
Because of all the knots, configuration, and all that, yep. The hardest thing I ever hit with my sawmill was a white pine knot, around probably a 6-inch limb on the damn thing.
It's a very strange tree, right?
But I went, I was cutting into that, and it just about stopped my mill.
Wow.
I had to stop pushing it forward. I just let go of the handle and backed it out a little bit because it was choking. And I can saw through hardwood knots, and you hardly even notice, but pine knots are different. They're probably the hardest. They're harder than hardwood.
Yeah, I just noticed with white pine, whether felling them for forestry or doing tree work, that they probably surprised me more than any other tree.
Yeah. Yeah, they're
doing something that I was like, huh, I didn't expect that.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really, but it makes beautiful lumber. I mean, live edge. And
cuts
I do
like
a lot
on a sawmill.
I do a lot of tabletops. And, you know, after it's down for a year, it'll blue stain underneath the bark. These bugs move in and give a little their character to it. And then the bark falls off. Because I don't saw white pine as soon as I get it in because I don't have a market for that. I got a market for the stained and the real pretty stuff. And, you know, people like knots. I've seen it a change in the grading system now. They take low grade and they make floor out of it because people just love that.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's what I see a lot of people at my mill is I'll show them a low grade piece of wood because they never seen it because it's not out there unless they work with pallets. And because that's where all the pretty go, the curly and the wormy and all that gets just slammed into that. It's all the very clear lumber and, for cabinet making and furniture making and, they have to have a really good grade for all that. And that's mostly what they're looking for. That's a high turnover. And, grading again, if a log sits in the yard too long, it'll degrade itself just from staining or any of that. When you buy a log, it's like it has a shelf life. Maple in the summer has about a 3 to 4 week shelf life. If you don't saw it by then, the stain's going to move in and you just got your selecting better log that turned into 3 common. So, but at my place, it turns into beauty. And, that's what it is. People that buy or the purchasers of wood don't get to see what I have down there because of the commercial end of it. In the stores, they don't. I mean, there's some furniture stores now that do it, but it's not high volume yet, and I think it's going to become that way. And I was glad to see the change because a lot less wood is getting wasted now and being used in something that has cherry wood mineral in it is very pretty.
You think less wood's being wasted now?
What's that?
You think less wood's being wasted now?
Yeah.
Amazing.
I do.
Man.
I think
as a forester, I don't agree at all.
You don't?
No way.
Huh.
I think way more wood's being wasted because we don't have mills. We don't have near as many
no,
mills.
No, I'm saying once it gets to the mill.
Once it gets to you, sure. Yeah, I mean, a lot of trees, we used to have tree guys and stuff. Like
just in Fleischmann's Heim
out. You can pretty much take off Connecticut, and they'll take down trees and just send them through the chipper.
I can name, yeah, I know.
Big
yeah.
oak trees.
Yeah.
Nice straight
oak and cherry and
60 foot long.
Anything residential usually can't go to a sawmill because the risk of metal in it.
Yeah, I mean, well.
Well,
I mean,
check everything.
These guys just don't have the time for it, too. The Northern Cup and the firewood.
Well, a lot of these big mills, they have metal detectors and it kicks them off.
Yeah.
They detect metal, it kicks them off down another chute and they get degraded. Well, I have a poem for the night.
Yeah.
I guess it's getting about that time.
We've got 5 minutes.
But this one I wrote back in 1128 and 98. It's called The Beech Nut, and that's just because it's the hunting time of the year. And this was I was going through some hard times at this point in my life, and I wrote this poem actually out while I was hunting. It's called The Beech Nut. I watched the spring run down through the trees. I felt thirsty, so I got down on my knees, bent over the water to get a drink. The blood rushed to my head, and it made me think, "My Lord, what am I doing here?" He said, "Son, you came to shoot a deer." "That's right," I said, and started walking. A ways down the trail, I heard someone talking. I looked to the left, and then to the right. The words became louder, but there's no one in sight. I yelled out loud and asked, "Who's there?" Still no answer, but I didn't care. Sat for a while, as quiet as could be. Quiet and still was everything but one tree. A big, beautiful beech nut, as grand as anything I'd ever seen. This tree was swaying, but I felt very serene. At this time again, I heard a voice. It said to me that you do have a choice. I closed my eyes and asked, "What do you mean?" The voice said back, "You must make the break clean." Again, I asked, "What are you trying to say?" "Look around you, son, and see the beauty of this day. There is nothing as important as life here and now. And see this clearly, so you can know how to get as much as you may out of life again. To bottle your talent is a terrible, grave sin. The Lord used that beech nut to get me to listen. I again can actually feel myself start to glisten. I came from the forest without a deer that night, but got on another plane and my mind was in flight. I got more from that hunt than I ever thought. That wonderful beech nut had me a lesson to be taught. I know God's spirit was in that tree. He saw me again struggling and is helping to set me free." And I hope all you folks have a wonderful, beautiful holiday and a happy new year most of all. And I guess we'll see you next year.
Yeah. Pretty much. We'll be on. There's 5 Wednesdays, I believe.
Yeah.
In December. But if you want to see some nice beach.
You want to see some nice.
If you want to see some nice beach, go down to the lower elevations in the Hudson Valley because beech don't grow as. They're not as common.
Right.
So where I grew up in New Paltz, you'll find beautiful, big, smooth, gray bark beech because the disease doesn't move as fast. And up here where there's so much beech, the beech bark disease spreads like wildfire.
It spreads like crazy,
But down there, my wrestling coach had beech trees.
Mm-hmm.
And they were his prized beech trees.
Yeah.
And
they're
one day,
skin.
The wrestlers decided.
They're wrinkly.
And he knew exactly who to kill.
Yeah.
Because they wrote their names on his prized beech trees.
Well, that's it. It's that
and
smooth.
He knew. And they thought they were being cool and doing something good and. He visited that every single one of those guys who wrote their names on his peach trees.
You guys were doing sprints afterwards.
You see that?
I didn't do it. I had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, well, you see that on, you know, when you're hiking trails and that they'll do it in the birches and carve their names in trees and whatnot.
Beach, too.
But yeah. Beach is I saw probably had to be 6 foot diameter beach now up in Albany. Just driving along, and I pulled over, and one of my sons, or I think Mitch, was with me. Goes, "Geez, Dad, what happened?" He thought I hit something because I see. I pull over, and I said, "Jesus, look at that beech tree!" And he goes, "So we got out, and we walked around it, and it was. They're so. I don't know. I just get. I feel so comfortable around them. It's like." Yeah. You know, they have so many, there's so much energy and history in that one tree that it almost becomes confusing.
I think it's a copper beech, but there's a beautiful one in Red Hook, right in the village.
Really?
Huge. Huge. Yeah. And they're really cool when they're big, you know?
I saw a huge one in Florida. I was on A1A or whatever that was, and, you know, it was by a Walgreens or something, and trace of traffic. I think three lanes going each way, and I pulled over and went right into the parking lot. And Dad goes, "What's the matter?" And I said, "Well, there's a beautiful beach over there." So I walked out into one lane, and I made cars go around me so I could take pictures of it.
Well, that's about all the time we have in From the Forest. And if you missed the show, it's Grading Wood from Stumps to Lumber with Gary Mead. And have a good night.
Good night, everyone.
Peace, everybody. From the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way, his ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way, getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town.